Hello and welcome to The Rad Dad Show. My guest today is Dan Shapiro. Dan is a serial entrepreneur from Seattle, and he's currently on his company number 4. You may have heard about this company. It's called Glowforge. They make laser printers that allow you to create anything you want from a comfort of your home with just the push of a button. Before this, Dan was also a founder of a board game called Robot Turtles. You probably heard this name too, because at the time, it was the biggest Kickstarter crowdfunded board game ever. Dan created both of these companies because he was inspired by his kids to do something which would be meaningful and inspiring for them in their life. Today, Dan joins us on the show to talk about these projects and how kids can actually be an amazing source of inspiration for an entrepreneur. By the way, if you've ever thought about buying a Glowforge, stay tuned because somewhere on the show, Dan will share a discount code which will give you $500 off. Without further ado, Dan, welcome to the show.
All right. Hi, I'm Dan Shapiro. I'm excited to talk about parenting and Glowforge and lasers and robot turtles and all sorts of good stuff. I actually started my first company in college, which was a DJ business, which came out of building laser shows and selling them over the internet. And then people said, oh, you should bring your laser show to my party. And then they said, while you're here, why don't you start playing some music? So I actually paid for a good chunk of my college education playing music and showing laser shows at parties, which, if you know what I wound up doing, was a little bit of foreshadowing. But never thought much of that. Went to work in the software business, came up to here to Seattle to work for Microsoft. Went to work at a startup that made cell phones for teenagers. Actually made the cell phones and software and everything. I ran product for that. Spent some time doing games at Real Networks, but loved the startup thing. And so my first startup, originally called Ontella, now PhotoBucket, was born out of a real excitement around the product and this idea that you could automatically get pictures off of your Motorola Razr or your Nokia and onto the internet. And also in part just because I was really excited about building a company and what that entailed. And it was 2 years into Ontella when I was, let's see, gosh, how old would I have been? Like 33, thereabouts? When we had kids, and that changed everything.
So the first startup, 2 years into it, you have kids, and I don't think you can plan for twins, can you?
No, I mean, we knew it was likely because we had IVF, and it was our second round of IVF when we got pregnant. As a side note, I find that IVF is something people don't like to talk about, fertility problems. Uh-huh. But as more and more people are having kids later and later in life, it's really common. And so we were very lucky because we got into a pep group for sort of, you know, parenting support before birth that was twins targeted. So we found out that we were having twins, you know, as most folks do at the first ultrasound, but we knew the likelihood was higher. And then we were surrounded by a lot of other folks who were going through some of the same challenges. And, you know, twins is a lot in common and a few things different, higher likelihood of complications. So it was great because we were prepared when our son had to go to the ISKU as soon as he was born. We kind of talked through that and had a plan for it. And, you know, he was fine. And they were 4 weeks early and a little small, but again, prepared for it because that's likely with twins. I remember when we were pregnant and probably every 6 weeks we'd wind up in the prenatal ER with some sort of problem or potential complication. And I said, part of me is glad that this is as high risk and as fraught as it is, because I would be just as worried either way, but at least this way everybody else is worried with me. I mean, if we had like one kid, normal pregnancy, everything healthy, I would still be freaked out. You know, my worry meter would be at 11, but at least this way it felt justified. But I would feel that way regardless because, you know, it's your family. And nothing's as important as that. So, so juggling the company alongside that was a toil, both sort of emotionally and time-wise, and just work and the amount of stuff that needed to be done. But you find ways to make it work, and you find ways to juggle that.
Uh-huh. Well, let's talk about those ways, right? Did your wife work at the time, or did she have to go stay home with the kids, basically, because
she had her own business, but it was as a professional organizer, so she could schedule time, so she could ramp that back. Mm-hmm. as that went on, and kind of dial that up and down as you know her time and energy allowed. She was on bed rest for the last while, so it was all hands on deck for that. As far as like she was totally focused, and I could work more or less regular hours up until the kids were born, and even after that, although I don't know if I was particularly effective because I was in such a fog of sleep haze, I don't think I was at my best. When the kids were two. I did a strange transaction where we bought our biggest partner, PhotoBucket, merged the companies together, and then I stepped out of the company in terms of day-to-day operations and started a new company. So right as the kids were two or three and I was starting to get a good night's sleep, I was like, all right, I've got some energy. Let's do it again. And cycled through. That company lasted exactly 6 months before Google bought us.
Uh-huh.
And I spent a couple of years at Google as an exec running this division called Google Comparison Inc. And that was actually, you know, Google's big companies tend to have good infrastructure for parents and the like. And so that was okay. But, you know, my passion for creating things was kind of calling to me. So after a couple of years, I had a really unique experience. I took a leave of absence because I had a book that I'd promised. Mm-hmm. I'd promised O'Reilly shortly before we got pregnant. So it hadn't happened for 4 years. So it was 4 years overdue. And the book is called Hot Seat, the Startup CEO Guidebook. And I took a leave of absence to finish this book.
Wait, so let me double check. You promised that book after doing your first startup. Not even while doing your first startup, you were writing the book. And then things kind of got in the way.
Yeah. Mm. Then life got in the way. So I was way overdue on this book. So I took the summer to go work on that. And while I was doing that, the twins were four. And four is an age where they really start to, like, they start to be little people. Mm-hmm. And they start to be interesting in a way that grown-ups are interesting, not just amusing in the way that kids are amusing. And I decided it was time to start to play games. And I was horrified by the notion of having to play Candyland with my children. Because children's games can be really painful for grown-ups. Like, it's nice to see them having fun, but it's just mind-numbing. And so I started playing around with them with this idea of a game that would be fun for the grown-up to play as well as the kids, and cooked up this board game idea that I called Robot Turtles. And it was based around programming principles. So even though they couldn't read yet, they could use these picture cards to build a really simple program. And the idea is that the kid was the programmer and the grown-up is the computer, and computers do whatever the programmer says. Like, that's what computers do.
Yep.
And it turns out that one of the most fun things in the world for a kid is to boss around their parents the way programmers boss around computers. So this dynamic where the kid writes a program by laying out the cards and then the parent has to go and do whatever they say by making funny noises and moving pieces around the board really worked. And I created a Kickstarter around this because I thought this would be a fun thing to actually bring to the world. The Kickstarter blew up. It set a record for the most backed board game Kickstarter ever. And I wound up being a board game entrepreneur for a year and made 30,000 of them, delivered them. Pardon me. Delivered them to all the backers and then licensed the game to ThinkFun, which is a really great educational board game company, and spent about a year wrapping that up so that it was kind of self-sufficient. And it was in the process of doing that, kids, you know, another year older, that I wound up with this, for prototyping the board game, with this $11,000 industrial carbon dioxide cutting laser intended for small-scale factories installed in my garage. And I still have pictures of the kids helping me, like, uncrate the thing straight from China. And it's, like, bigger than they are. And my wife helping me pry off, like, wooden slats from the side of the box. And it was this horrible contraption that took me days to get it working, weeks to make anything useful from it. But once I got it up and running, I had this revelatory moment. And I said, you know, this technology has been kind of in a backwater since the 80s. Where it was developed as a factory technology. But it feels like it finally delivers on a promise that I've been hearing about for a long time. The promise of having the, you know, 3D printer in your home, the Star Trek replicator kind of experience where you could think of the thing you want, push a button, and get it. But unlike 3D printers, the things aren't made from lumpy plastic. Laser cutter engravers can actually go cut things and print things on materials like wood and leather, fabric, paper, even seaweed and chocolate. Mm-hmm. And the results were beautiful. And so, unlike all my other tools and toys, people actually started asking me to make stuff for them on this. And this is where the idea for my current company, and the one I'm most excited about, I think ever, Glowforge, came from. It's a desktop device that starts at $2,500, lets you print beautiful things at the push of a button. And that's what I've been devoting my time and energy for the last 4 years to. That was a big arc, sorry, but
yeah, yeah.
How I got from there to here.
It's amazing because I think what's great about you is that a lot of people would say they're going to do stuff. You know, they'll write the book, they'll make the game, and they don't. Like you mentioned, you basically started one company, then got a niche to do something else, got that company to run on its own, started another company, and you keep doing this, right? And in the game, you were at Google. You could have just relaxed and breathed by and have a good time. But no, here you are doing this game. And I remember we were actually chatting at Google at the time, right?
Yep.
And the great part, I want to focus on the game for a little bit because I find it really amusing. And I did buy the game for my daughter as well. We tried it when she was two. I don't think it's intended for two-year-olds because at the time we could do like, ooh, that's a pretty things, right?
It's a really good chew toy for two-year-olds. That's
yeah, the concept of programming wasn't quite there yet, but it was still fun to like just have something in your hands. But I thought it was great how you didn't overthink it, and I want you to talk more about kind of the process and how you did this. But you know, you didn't overthink like all the graphics or the paper or this. You kind of just went with it, did it, put it out there, and people bought it. Right? It was the lean startup in its best, I think. So can you talk about the game a little bit?
Yeah, the game started out with like PowerPoint clip art and a laminating machine and just messing around with the kids. And it was kind of loose, played around with different rules until we found something that we liked. Then I hired an artist using rentacoder.com, I think, or one of the you know, find remote work sites, where I brought somebody in who is in Indonesia, and I really liked his work. And so he illustrated it. I do remember there's one point where the game intersected greatness, which was I went to my high school reunion. I hadn't gone to one, but I ran into my best friend from junior high school, who was kind of a skate enthusiast and was I would skateboard a little bit, but he was much more into it than I was. And it turns out that in the intervening decades, he'd become a director at Pixar. And I showed him what I was working on and showed him some of the art. And he's like, oh, the turtle's eyes are wrong here. And he scribbled and redrew the eyes. And I was like, okay, great. And sent that over to my artist. And I was like, could you do this with the eyes? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's really good. Great. So, but besides that, it was this one artist who was just back and forth with me working through this. It wasn't quick and sloppy. I mean, there are lots of corners cut. But I was working on a pretty tight budget. I said, I'm willing to spend this much to bring it to life, and called a ton of different manufacturing facilities. I had a really tight date, a tight schedule that I was working under. And, you know, you say I keep doing these things, but for every one thing I've done, there have been like 10 things that I kind of started up, played around with for a while, and fell by the wayside that mm-hmm. never really clicked. And so for me, that's always a risk. If I don't keep moving it forward, and if I don't keep doing something about it, then it could just expire. So for any one project, there's 5 or 10 that don't make it. And so it was driven by equal parts wanting to build something good and get it into the world, and also knowing that if I sat around on my hands for too long, I'd lose initiative, I'd lose inertia, and that would never happen. So had a date, had a deadline, and the last few weeks before that were just frantic. I did playtesting plus all the video for all the shoot for the video all in one crazy day. When I lined up I was at a party and that somebody in the tech community had thrown. So there were a bunch of startup folks, and I kind of realized that morning that I was way behind and had to get a bunch of video of kids playing this in order to meet the mm-hmm. timeline I was trying to hit. And so at this party, I just basically went around to people and said, hey, are you free tomorrow? Could you bring your kid over? Hey, are you free tomorrow? Could you bring your kid over? And then wired my house up with like, you know, phones taped to stands, and like my wife's phone taped to a stand and a GoPro on the uh-huh. taped to something else, and sat and played for an hour. And I was like, great, thank you, goodbye. Okay, next, come on in, let's play. And I was taking playtest notes because I was still refining the rules at the same time that I was shooting this video that yeah. ultimately got edited together. So it was an incredible amount of work and focused effort, but you know, you're also right that it wasn't this exercise in perfection. It wasn't this beautiful pinnacle of a product. It was very, very personal. And it was me and, you know, some people I hired on sort of an hourly basis to help out a little bit. But it was something I'd done that I expected to do purely for the joy of it and see if I could sell 1,000 copies of it so I could get my sort of minimum factory run. I wasn't expecting it to get as big as it was, but it was a delightful surprise, and it was really fun. On the flip side, when I was done, it was clear to me I wanted to do something else because as great as it was, I wasn't excited about being a board game magnate.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, the board game business, a large piece of it is being Dunder Mifflin from The Office. Like a paper company, because you're printing paper and you're selling cardboard, and that wasn't the big next hill I wanted to climb.
So, in terms of total hourly investment, are we talking combined like days, weeks, or months?
It was months that I put into it. I think it was 3 months for 3 months of really intensive, like let's go get this thing done, that I spent to bring it out, and then it was pretty much my full time. Project for the rest for the next 6 to 9 months, delivering it and then getting it licensed and everything else.
I'm asking because I think it's important to understand, right, for every one of us who wants to quote unquote write a book, that even these seemingly short projects are going to consume you and take a lot of time. And like, if you're going to embark on this journey, you really got to get yourself prepared for a long journey, even for a small or seemingly small project, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess now I'm sitting here looking at the Glowforge and I'm thinking
that...
Not a small project, but if you were to do your board game today, you could have probably printed a big sheet of cardboard with the pieces on it and then cut it on Glow in half an hour, and that would have streamlined a lot of that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, not hypothetical. This weekend, I was looking to... My father-in-law taught my kids poker. And so I went to go look for a travel poker set, and I couldn't find one I liked on Amazon. So I spent an hour dickering around and coming up with a design for a travel poker set. It took about 45 minutes to print one sheet of material, and now I have a travel poker set, and it's great.
Yeah.
And the kids love it, and I can take it with us when we go to a restaurant. We can play poker or blackjack or whatnot at the restaurant while we're waiting. So it really is that easy. Like, I can go from an idea to a thing, and in fact, anybody who has this tool can. In minutes or hours.
So can listeners go and buy the travel poker set now from you?
No, but they can get it for free. All they have to do is buy Glowforge, and then they can go download the plans from our community forum. So of the of Glowforge owners, about 80% of them read our forum, and more than half contribute, log in, or participate every single month. So it's this incredibly active field of ideas and excitement and inspiration and complaints. It's the best way that I know what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong, because people tell us when we fall down, and it's really open for the whole world to see. But only people who have access to a Glowforge can contribute. So anything that's there, you know, is from somebody who's got real skin in the game. But if you go to the forum, you'll see the free plans for the travel poker set. People can download and customize with their own artwork or anything else. So free travel poker set, but you have to go to glowforge.com and buy a Glowforge in order to get access to it. I do have a coupon code for your customers, for your listeners, that they could use.
What is it?
So if they go to glowforge.com/FOD, that's friend of Dan, then they can get up to $500 off of their purchase.
Well, excellent. I'm going there after the show.
Very good.
Here's a free idea. If you let your customers complain via printing stuff on the Glowforge inside your office.
Right, right. Just send the print right here.
It goes right to your office. Yeah, you just get the print. And this way they kind of have to invest into the complaint.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We know they mean it. By the way, your listeners should know we're sitting in my office. There's a Glowforge Pro behind me that we're kind of pointing at on top of the air filter. So, in theory, we could just have people print straight to here, and then I'd get everything I'd done wrong engraved, literally.
Put up on the wall.
Potentially in stone.
Yeah. Can you print in stone?
Yeah, you can engrave stone. You can't cut stone as easily, although some folks have done, like, microfracture, and then you crack. But, yeah, you can engrave stone, and it's stunning. Like, take a picture, throw it on a piece of marble, and you have an amazing gift that you can frame for somebody. something that's really popular is people will go buy little slate tiles for like 49 cents from Home Depot. And when you engrave them, they look incredible. You put feet on the bottom, little cork feet on the bottom, and now you have gorgeous coasters that look like something you'd pay $5 each for. And then folks will sell them or use them themselves. But it's a really neat sort of personal creation that you can – it's so easy. Like it's the sort of thing you can do within 20 minutes of the idea striking you.
Well, in fact, you can decorate your bathroom with custom printed tiles if you really wanted to, right? You can do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, you can. We've got folks who will engrave sort of kitchen tile or bathroom tile. You can engrave it directly. You can take ink and then wipe it on so it stains it, and then the engraving changes color. The rest wipes off. It's really neat. And we started from the very outset to make this as easy to use as we could, with the idea that it would be useful for everybody from engineers to kindergartners. And, you know, my kids were a piece of the inspiration for this, because back when I got that laser in the garage and I was excited about it, I would go to the kids and I'd say, okay, like, let's make something. And they'd hold up a drawing of whatever it was and say, let's make a doll. Here, I drew a doll. And so I would go and I'd put it on the scanner and I'd scan it, and then I'd import it into Adobe Illustrator, in Photoshop, and I'd clean it up, and then into Illustrator, and I'd vectorize and go through this process, and then I'd put it on the software. And the software for most lasers is just really challenging to use. And so it's this weird printer driver, and you set it through, and you have to – anyway. Then you put in the material, and you have to do test cuts at different power and speed. And once you've gotten through all that, then you can run the print. So 4 hours later, I'd come back and I'd be like, look, here's your doll. And they'd be like, hooray. And I'm sitting here going, man, if the material and the printer work together, if the software was integrated with this so you could actually transform that image directly, this should take 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, with a Glowforge, you can set this up. It takes about 30 minutes from the time the box gets dropped on your front door until you're up and printing. Average customer time is less than 30 minutes until they're holding their first print. So that's unbox, set up, plug in, Wi-Fi, everything. And it takes about 5 minutes to go from a drawing to a finished print. And the proof of that is every time we go to a trade show, like a show like Maker Faire, we'll have a line. It's an hour long of kids and adults waiting with a drawing that they have to go print something. And it takes us about 4.5 minutes to get somebody in there, put it in, show them how it works, run the print, the whole nine yards, mm-hmm. and out the other side. So we will do hundreds of those a day. And it's just that easy that, you know, if you can draw, you can create something with it.
Where do I get the materials? Can I just put anything on the printer?
So there's a whole bunch of anythings you can put on the printer, any natural material, leaves, paper, cardboard from your old Amazon boxes, stone, glass. We sell a line of materials that we recommend that are encoded with the settings already. So you put them in there and everything's loaded up and ready to go. Mm. They're tested. The woods are sanded and have a finish applied. They have a protective coating. So when you're done, you have a beautiful masterpiece instead of a project that you have to go finish. But people use a mix. They'll use our materials for things where they're doing, where they're iterating on a project and they want it to go quickly. And when the material is kind of like a unique material is the focus, like they want to take a leaf and laser cut their house into a leaf and frame it and put it on the wall, they're going to use a leaf. And, you know, yeah. We don't sell leaves.
To anyone listening, you can get in the business of selling leaves.
Leaf selling, yes. Yeah.
What's your end vision?
This moment that stuck with me where the kids came up, and they were in kindergarten at the time, and they said, Dad, we've been discussing this, and they were in the same kindergarten class. We have iPads at school. I'm like, yeah, I know where this is going. Those iPads are very educational, yes. We would learn more if we had an iPad at home, yes. So, Dad, you should print us iPads. I was like, wait, what? Record scratch. Print you iPads. And I kind of laughed. And then I thought about it. And I thought back to when I was 7. When I was 7, my parents had an argument about whether or not to get me a computer. I only learned this years later. My dad is a professor of computer science. My mom's a professor of speech and communication. My dad said, there's no point in having a computer at home. I know I use them all day. And my mom said, no, I actually think this is really important that kids be exposed to this early on. So my mom won, and I got a Commodore 64, and it cost about $2,500 in 1982.
So expensive.
Yeah, and I remember sitting on my dad's knee learning to program in BASIC. And we'd just gone to see Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, so we used a bunch of if-then statements to make a text adventure about the story of Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yeah, so in today's speak, you were doing machine learning.
More or less, yeah. And I love that, and I used it constantly. And I grew up with this sense of entitlement, which normally is a bad thing, but I'd argue in this case it's not, the sense of entitlement that computers worked for me and that computers were a thing that were mine to do with to help me in my problems. They were tools for me to use. As compared to other tools, like machine shop tools, which were not for me. Those were things other people used to do other things. And so from that moment forward, when I had a problem, I thought, oh, is this a problem for a computer? Maybe, maybe not. But it was something that I owned. When a computer didn't work, I said, stupid computer. I didn't say stupid me. I said, stupid computer. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to help me. And when I think about the arc that my life took, it was the sense of computing entitlement that put me on a path where I found it to be my course in life to put technology to work for me instead of feeling like I was working to learn technology or to as a slave of technology. And what I saw in my kids was that same sense of entitlement to making things. Their question wasn't, Dad, could you go buy me this? It was, Dad, why can't we go print this? Mm-hmm. And it didn't occur to them that because it was too damn hard. In the same way that when I first got a computer, I was like, I'm going to go make Pac-Man and I'm going to go make all these games. And at some point I'm like, okay, that's really hard. I'm going to start small and I'm going to learn and grow forward. And so the thing that got me so excited about this idea is taking the ability to make things, an ability that I got by virtue of a background in computers, by virtue of an engineering degree, by virtue of countless time and hours in the shop and encouragement and support and all these things, taking that and putting it in a box that anybody could purchase and making that box as affordable as we possibly could and having this be the same way that computer was, this gateway into a different world where, you know, that computer was a data center wrapped in glass and plastic on your desk for $2,500. Well, I want to wrap a factory in glass and plastic and put it on your desk for $2,500. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to create that same set of opportunities for a next generation that computer created for me by putting this incredibly powerful tool within reach. And it's still at $2,500. It's still a stretch, but it's something that a family can afford and give that same opportunity to them. So while there's a million uses for this, people scaling their Etsy stores and prototyping machine tools and all sorts of things, the one that brings closest to my heart is giving other people those same creative superpowers that I was able to get and that I'm able to give my family.
You know what I find really amazing? $2,500 is basically 10 months of no cable. And that's still expensive, but it's completely doable for somebody who decides to make creation their priority. So you give kids and adults and the whole family really an opportunity to create something together and see it come alive right there in front of them. In essence, Glowforge can enable local commerce. So instead of buying something that would be produced in China and then shipped halfway around the world and then sit on a store shelf for months until it's purchased, you can enable me to go and buy something from my neighbor who is really skilled at making that one particular thing. And how awesome is that?
Exactly. I think about a world where it makes more sense to print things where they're used, when they're used, for the purpose that they're used, than it does to create them halfway around the world, put mm-hmm. them in an Amazon warehouse, and let them sit there until somebody orders it to be driven to their house. Yeah. And that's really exciting to me, changing the way production works to put it at the place where the production happens and in the hands of the people who need it. And, you know, the scope of things people do with this just boggles my mind. It's hard to imagine what something like this could do. So, like, if I open up right now, I go to Instagram, and I'm thumbing my phone, so, you know, apologies. But if I go to Instagram and I search for hashtag Glowforge, and your listeners can do this too, you can see just some tiny fragment of the incredible stuff people are doing on a day-by-day, hour-by-hour basis. And that's things like, there's one guy who's selling high-end Japanese knives, and he's engraving photos on the side of the knives. So the customer takes their photo and gets the family or the picture of their house or something engraved on the knife and personalized. I'm looking, this is just you know, what's in the feed right now. Somebody's got this amazing Pokemon box. Somebody's making earrings for themselves and their family, it looks like. Somebody's got this crazy compass. Here's a whole frame. It looks like somebody's selling earrings at a craft market, that the earrings that they've created. There's a pile of keychains, I'm guessing, are a gift. There's this incredible shell that's, I don't even know what it is. It's beautiful. And people are just using this to express themselves and their own creativity. And I never cease to be amazed at the quantity of stuff people come up with, or even just the number of different ways people can create a Settlers of Catan set of their own. Because there's like, that's one of the things that people love doing, is reinterpreting the Settlers of Catan game. We've seen a bunch of those. So it's so inspiring to see where people take this and how people take things that they may find in other places, like a wallet design from our design catalog, and then make it their own with their own engravings and customization and pockets, and really making it something that's unique to them and their needs.
And I kid you not, as we were sitting in your office when we were talking about all this amazing creativity, I just realized that there is a business idea that I want to implement. And I was literally thinking about it this morning, and now I'm thinking of how Glowforge can actually do it for me for like fraction of the cost of what I was thinking this morning, and I think I'm going to go buy one and just do it like tomorrow.
It'll pay for itself pretty quickly. Oh, and we just started offering financing. So $120 a month at the entry point.
We're using
a firm. We actually looked at a bunch, and we found that they had the happiest customers of the financing solutions we looked at. And our internal company motto is, we have the best customers. So we wanted to pick the partner that was going to make our customers the happiest. And that actually means that if you're using this for a business, you can pay for your Glowforge by using your Glowforge, which makes it easier to bring it to the home.
Yeah. Oh, this is just amazing.
I don't know if you can share on air what your idea is, but I'm really curious now.
Inexpensive frames for kids' artwork.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey there, listeners. So as Dan and I sit around his office and geek around the picture frames, I really can't shake off this notion that I really got to do this. I've always wanted to have these picture frames, but never had the ability to actually get them quickly. So the new framing company is born. If you're like me and you've always wanted to frame your kids' artwork and pictures without spending an arm and a leg and have it delivered straight to your door, then check out thenewframingcompany.com and use promo code RADDEAD to get 25% off your first purchase. Now let's get back to the show.
And that it's so easy and fast to do, that you can print one, you can tweak it, you can do it again, you can iterate until you get all the details right. I mean, it's like compile time when you're writing software. Mm-hmm. The faster you can try the code you've written, the faster you develop. And similarly, the faster you can create the physical version of your idea, the faster you can improve on it and learn from it.
Sold.
Yeah. That's my job.
Yeah. Well, I think we talked about Glowforge quite a bit, and I'm going to link to all of this so listeners can go and check it out and buy, and then we can all print really rad stuff together. But let's get back to the rest of your startup journey and family. And I think for a lot of listeners who are contemplating doing a startup, or you know, even contemplating doing a family, what do you think are the most kind of important lessons that you learn over time to deal with it, to do it better, to make less mistakes?
I only have one great learning at the intersection of family and startups, because most of it is most of family is family and most of startups is startups. But there was only one thing I learned. It's not really startups. But this was the thing that probably saved my sanity. And it was after I left PhotoBucket and was in the middle of doing SparkBuy, and I was crushed. I was distraught beyond all belief, because every single night there was something work-wise that was demanding my time. It might be stay and work late, might be go to a fundraising, to a networking event where I could meet potential investors. It might be travel, overnight travel to go and, meet folks to develop the business and push it forward. And every single day I had to make a decision of what was more important, that thing or my kids and my family and my wife. And that, I mean, it was fine for a year and 2 years, and in year three of that, it was just eating my soul doing that every day. Because how do you do that? How do you say, well, you know, do I try to make my business succeed a little more, or am I there for my family? Especially when the work thing is always the shiny, important one time. You know, like, you don't know how big it is, but it's one time to do it, and there's one thing that's right in your face. In your family, you can always miss one night, right? Maybe not an anniversary, maybe not a, you know, a birthday, but just a regular Thursday versus this one thing that you have this time. But it was tearing me apart trying to make these decisions. And then I realized the stupidest, simplest thing, which was, I mean, two tools that I'm pretty good at are budgeting and prioritization. And so I said, wait, I know what I need to do here. I need to budget. I'm going to budget that I'm going to be gone 3 nights a week, maximum. Mm-hmm. And then my problem just got an order of magnitude simpler. Because now my problem isn't how do I trade my work off against my family. My problem is which of these work things this week is most important? And how do I balance these work needs against each other? And I can prioritize my job against my job. It's just when you start feeling like your work and your family are every single day in tension, it lets you take away that painful every single day moment and look at the broader view. So home 4 nights a week with a family, at dinner at least 4 nights a week, mm-hmm. and then 3 nights I do whatever it is that I need to do. And that was probably the single greatest improvement in my own life and my own happiness that I made that brought me forward. As far as, you know, just family advice, I'm no wiser there than anybody else. And as far as startup advice, I wrote it all down in a book because I'm very forgetful, and that way I wouldn't forget it. But all my best advice is in Hot Seat, the book mm-hmm. I wrote about startup CEOs, but more generally about startups. And it's not just my advice. It was getting to go talk to a whole bunch of great folks I knew, great entrepreneurs, both successful and failure, both successful entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs who failed at what they were trying to do. I don't want to say failures because they're not, but who didn't get where they were trying to go.
You can fail for many reasons. It's not always you.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily you who failed, period. It's you who failed at doing a thing. Mm-hmm. I failed at doing a huge number of things in my life, but I don't consider myself a failure. And just because the most recent thing somebody did failed doesn't mean that they're a failure either. And frankly, you can fail at everything you do in life and be a great parent and a great human and still be a big success in my book. Fail at everything you do at work and still be a great person. So in any case, it's a collection of stories of successes and failures with a real eye towards trying to take the things that, you know, when you we were talking at lunch about some of the experiences that are really common but nobody talks about, like when a parent meets their new child and doesn't immediately feel like they've fallen in love with the child. And saying, hey, look, in startup land, there are these things that happen a lot. There's co-founders who don't get along. That actually happens more often than not when a co-founder leaves an early stage startup. There's you know, downturns in the business that cause you to have to do things like layoffs, which are excruciatingly painful. But successful businesses have those as well as businesses that don't work out. And so trying to capture all those, remove a little bit of the stigma or at least a little bit of the, oh my gosh, I'm the only one, and take away from that. Because I think that's one of the biggest problems when you feel like you're alone and you're the only person who's facing whatever that problem is that you're dealing with today. The worst part is feeling alone, and the worst part is feeling like everybody's getting it right, but you're not.
Oh, that's excellent. And it brings me to a very important question, because I think it's possible that sometimes kids and partners of people who are working really hard stress environments, who have a lot of their shoulders, might not realize just how lonely they feel and how much stress there is in you. So what do you think people can do in order to help you and to help them communicate with you when you get home? How do you diffuse the tension? How do you get you to open up?
And it's hard because, you know, one of the classic things that you do with somebody who's facing a challenge is to have them talk about it. And sometimes when you go home, the last thing you want to do is talk about work. That can be very counterproductive if mm-hmm. what you're trying to do is get yourself into a separate space. So, you know, it really depends. Some days I go home and the kids are like, Daddy, and they come and wrap their arms around. And my wife's like, dinner's ready. And that's great. And I'm like, oh, okay. This is time to turn off work and to, you know, be in the moment. Sometimes I come home and I hear, he hit me and she took my thing and go to your room. And I'm like, okay, now it's time for me to engage as like, you know, a calm problem solver and mm-hmm. everything else. And sometimes I come home and it's kind of quiet and it's, you know, how did work go today? And my daughter actually loves what she calls CEO problems. She's like, Daddy, did you have any CEO problems today that you want to talk about? And then it's time to kind of like take any internal conflict and turmoil and package it up into a child size serving size, mm-hmm. right? And say, gosh, you know, honey, I did, and I'd love your help. And so, you know, have a conversation. It's like, well, you know, what's your problem, Daddy? And I remember like a year ago, I had a conversation and I said, well, I'm interviewing somebody to be a manager at Glowforge and he's really good at lots of things I need for the job. But I talked to him about one of the things that's really important to me, which is hiring people of all different backgrounds. And he didn't seem to think that was important. Should I hire this person? And so we had this great talk about, you know, a candidate who's really well qualified, but for whom one of our core values around diversity wasn't a core value for them and what to do about it. Now, in point of fact, this was an easy one for me because the simple answer is no. Uh-huh. Sitting down and having kind of a simplified talk with my daughter about this and the challenges I was going through and answering her questions actually took a whole bunch of other stress and pressure and everything that I remember I was feeling and let just a little air out of that overinflated balloon, which was something I really needed at that time. So it's totally different, and it depends on the day, and it depends on the situation. And sometimes for days or weeks or months, you feel like you're carrying the weight of the family and the business and everything else. And sometimes it feels like everything's going your way, and, you know, you're kind of like, hooray, finally we've made it, no more problem. And then, oh, crud, and then you switch, right? And then something goes sideways. But that's life. That's not startups. That's not parenthood. That's just life. And at least for me, the process of taking whatever my headache is and digesting it down into something that a child can relate to is very comforting. So if I'm thinking about somebody who's not working out at work and who I'm going to have to fire, that causes me immense personal stress and really upsetting. And I hate doing that. Mm-hmm. And you know, we work really hard to try and hire fantastic people, in part so that happens as infrequently as possible. But over the years, it's something that's happened from time to time. And sitting and having a conversation with my daughter that goes to things like, well, why did you hire this person if you don't think they're doing good work? And could they do better? And like, is there anything you could do? I actually find really peaceful in having this conversation about, you know, how do you think they feel and how does it make you feel? And so it's powerful and it really gives a different lens on the world to see it through the eyes of a child. It's a cliche, but it's something that I've been able to put to work for me to sort of intersect my parenting and the stress and problems that I feel and bring those together in a way that's constructive. Because at the end of the day, I don't think it's right to fire hose your problems onto your kids, nor do I think it's completely right to wall them off from your life. And trying to find a way that you can find some overlap between those is powerful and important.
Excellent point. And that brings me to our last question. With both companies, RoboTurtles and Glowforge, you've created something which will empower a whole new generation of creators. But outside of that, what do you think is the single most important thing that parents can do in order to set their kids up for success in life and give them that ability to be independent and creative and just really take the most out of life?
The big hard question for us on the education front was the preschool that they went to was also had a private school. Mm-hmm. And when they finished preschool, we had a big conversation about whether we wanted them to continue in private school or go to public school. And the way that we finally made that decision was I was constantly frustrated with their private school for all these different reasons. And I realized after talking to folks who are in the public school system that that would not change. But I remember saying to my wife, you know what, at least this way we won't feel like we're paying to be frustrated. But more to the point, in the private school system, there's constant volunteering, there's constant donations. In the public school system, it's the same. We looked at this and said we would rather invest our time and energy into the public school system and feel like we're a part of something bigger And, you know, my wife and I are both public school kids. So we did, but then we cheated and we moved to the best public school district in the region. So we took the money we would have spent on private school and used it instead to move to a great public school district.
So you own Mercer Island now?
Yes.
And if you don't mind me saying this, you know, publicly, but it's more Greg Guzman was on a podcast the other week and he also mentioned how they live in Mercer because it's the best public school. And just and especially if you have multiple kids, it allows you to send everyone to the same place and kind of forget about it for 10 years.
And then you can sit down with people like Greg and say, okay, Greg, which teachers do your kids have and how were they? Which we've done. Because he's like, it's a great stable school system where people spend time. And interestingly, because it has a reputation for being great, although it's not nearly as diverse as we want, it's fairly homogenous and people there are for the most part high income, there's this really powerful cadre of people who are renting one-room apartments on Mercer Island because they want their kids to have access to the best school in the region, even though they can barely afford it, even though they could have a much bigger house and an easier commute and everything else somewhere else. So what you find that to me makes a bigger difference is not just the funding, but the parents who are there because they care and who are committed together to making it a better school district. And that's the rub of it. So, you know, you say, what are the things that from an education standpoint are important? It's being around parents who care and who are invested and who invest in making that work for their kids. And it's that is part of the school system. And it's that as part of the one-on-one activity. When I think of the two most impactful things on me and my childhood, it was my dad spending time to teach me how to program and my mom teaching me about communications. She's a professor of speech and communication, specialized in organizational communications, and she would, from a very early age, talk to me about things like organizational leadership, although not in those words, right, in simplified voices, and showing me how people communicated and how they work together and talking about that. And that notion of rolling up your sleeves and doing something that's exciting and that you care about with your kids and letting your excitement be infectious is what motivates me in everything I do. That's the cross between my day job and my home job. And giving myself and giving other people the ability to sit down with their kids and bring whatever it is they're passionate about to life, whether it be a ballerina, whether it be a rubber band launcher, whether it be home improvement, you know, coasters for the home shelves, you name it. To empower people to do that and to inspire people to spend time together and with their families to do that, that's what gets me excited. That's what motivates me. That's what I love doing myself and what, with Glowforge, I want people to be able to do with their families. You know, that world of creativity and connection with your kids is something that I don't care if you're using pens and paper, if you're using scissors and glue, there's nothing like creating something with your family together as a family. It's one of my favorite things.
Excellent. Well, thank you for great advice and geeking out about Glowforge.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey there, listeners. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Rad Dad Show. If you liked it, share it on social media, email it to your friend, or just let somebody know. Also, if you're looking for picture frames for your kids' artwork, please go to the newframingcompany.com and check out our offerings. See you next time. This is your host, Kirill Zubovsky.